Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. America is having a love affair with food, and that partially explains why so many of us are overweight. It also explains the multi-billion dollar diet industry. 68% of us have dieted at one point or another. Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, Atkins, South Beach, Paleo, Keto, they're all famous names whose diet plans are based on various different methods, but all have one thing in common. According to experts, they don't work, at least not in the long run. Yeah, they help you take the weight off, but keeping it off is really, really difficult. You lose it, you gain it back, you lose it, you gain it back. Is there anything that works? Well, 8 years ago, a local woman heard about intuitive eating. It is not a diet. It is a different approach to food. For her, understanding intuitive eating and integrating that method into her own life helped her lose the weight she wanted. And more importantly, it has allowed her to keep it off for 8 years. Shelly Johnson is that woman. After yo-yoing for years, she says she lost over 160 pounds and was featured on the cover of People magazine's Half Their Size issue this past January, all because of intuitive eating. In fact, she wrote a book about her experience, Start Where You Are Weight Loss, and she has agreed to share her story with us and joins us for the hour in our Spirit Square studio. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Elise Resch literally wrote the book on the topic. She is the co-author of Intuitive Eating, an anti-diet revolutionary approach, and is a nutrition therapist specializing in, obviously, intuitive eating, eating disorders, and health at every size. And she's with us by phone from California. Thank you for getting up so early in the morning. Appreciate
it. I'm happy to be with you. Thank you.
Nice to have you here. So, Shelly, let me start with you. You say that for decades you were a yo-yo dieter with an eating disorder. What does that mean?
Well, I started dieting before I was age 10, and by age 13, I had bulimia, which is an eating disorder where you binge eat and then you purge that. In my case, I vomited food, and I did that for almost 20 years.
Wow. When did you become aware that what you were going through with this bulimia was a disorder?
I probably knew that early on. And even when I was 13, I knew that throwing up food after I ate it was not a good thing to do, but I was so desperate to lose weight, and that was my choice. That was what I decided I needed to do.
When you look back on that time in your life, perhaps you look at photographs of yourself when you're, what, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. Do you see yourself as somebody who needed to be concerned about weight, about size, about your eating habits?
I started being overweight when I was about 5 years old. So all my pictures from then, I was overweight until about 14, then I started trying to do anorexia for a while, and I stopped eating, so I dropped a bunch of weight. But my issue was always that I couldn't keep the weight off, so no matter what diet I did, I actually could lose the weight. I just couldn't keep it off.
At some point in time, I understand, you weighed as much as 300 pounds.
I was 304 pounds at my heaviest, that's correct.
Wow. Is this difficult to talk about?
It's better now. I'm getting used to talking about it. I would never talk about it for the longest time because I was ashamed of it, and I also got bullied a lot, and so I avoided the subject.
You are not 300 pounds now.
No, I'm not.
I'm not going to ask because that would be impolite to ask, but I have no idea. But you, I would not. I don't see you as somebody who has now or has ever had an eating problem. You are not. You're thin.
Thank you. I weigh roughly 130 pounds. But people with eating disorders, they can be really heavy, they can be really thin. You don't know what's going on with somebody.
So you were bulimic? You flirted with anorexia?
Correct.
Did you diet as well? Did you get yourself on some of these diet plans over time?
I've been on almost every major diet that you've seen advertised.
And would you lose the weight while you were on the diet?
Absolutely. Yeah, dieting was never my issue. I could always lose the weight. The problem was I could never keep it off. And as soon as I started eating regularly and not restricting myself, I'd gain all the weight back, and usually more.
Yeah, I've always heard that you sometimes, if you lose weight and you gain it back, you're going to gain back more than you lost. I'm not sure why that is. How many different diets did you experiment with over time?
Well, that's a good question. Probably 10, 15. I would do extreme things too. I would do your major diets, but also anything that somebody told me might work. So I'd stop eating sugar and flour and meats and fats, processed foods, anything that somebody told me might work.
Mm. So eventually you realized, I understand from reading some of the things you've written, that your weight gain and your eating was not about food. It was about how you thought and think, I suppose, about food. What led you to that realization?
About 2010, I was writing in my journal, and I wrote, if it's not about food, then what is it? And I did that because I'd been on so many diets, and I could never keep the weight off, and I thought to myself, it can't possibly be about food. There has to be something else. And that question, the book that I wrote, Start Where You Are, Weight Loss, answers that question, because it isn't about the food, and I wish somebody would have told me that, because once you deal with the reason why you're eating, the food will take care of itself.
Because as a young person, as a child, you rode horses, you rode bikes, you were active, you ice skated, I believe. You were not somebody, a couch potato. You were not sitting on the sofa eating potato chips. But you still were overweight. Is that because you were overusing food for a specific purpose that you didn't understand?
That is correct. I was using food to cope with my life when I felt lonely or sad or angry. Any emotion I didn't want to feel, I would use food to numb myself.
Wow. Elise Resch is with us from California. She's a nutrition therapist, the author of Intuitive Eating, and that's what we're going to be talking about the remainder of this hour, Intuitive Eating. Is Elise's story at all familiar to you, Elise? I mean, Shelley's story at all familiar to you, Elise?
Absolutely. I've been in private practice for 38 years, and not to make you unique, Shelley, because I'm sure you are in so many ways. The story, however, it's over and over. I'm a certified eating disorder, RD, and so many of my clients, the majority of them who have eating disorders, it began with dieting, which began with feeling bad about their bodies and feeling bad about themselves and using food emotionally. So, yes.
Mm. And your dad, I read, was he grew up in Germany in World War II, and he was fairly strict when it came to body image, and he kept hammering at you, essentially, right?
That's correct. He grew up in Nazi Germany, and their whole master race is about perfection, and being overweight was completely unacceptable to him.
And that's what you talk about when you were trying to cope with your life and the pressures in your life. They were coming from your father? Were they coming from elsewhere?
Yes, they were coming from elsewhere also. I was bullied a lot at school for my weight, and so I just felt ashamed, and the shame is a big reason that I overate also. I didn't want to feel that.
How common is it, Elise, for people who are being pressured by those that love them to change the way they approach food or to change their weight? How common is it for that pressure to actually add to the problem?
Well, we live in diet culture, so there's pressure in our society. And then if in the family there isn't support for a person as they are, you know, we're not our weight. We are individuals, and so if the family is pressuring along with society pressuring, you know, it's just a perfect storm of leading to an eating disorder, dieting and an eating disorder. Right. So yes.
When we talk about eating disorders, we mentioned too bulimia and anorexia. Are there others?
Well, that's an interesting question. There is an eating disorder called binge eating disorder, which I think is not always an accurate description. For people, I think that very often when people are binging, it's a result of restriction. I mean, it's inevitable. When you restrict your food, both physiologically, neurochemically, and psychologically, you're going to rebound. And so I have found that with so many people who call themselves binge eaters or have been diagnosed, actually, as a psychiatric diagnosis as a binge eater, when they start changing their relationship with food, when they start understanding the psychology of intuitive eating, what ends up happening is the majority of their eating is for satisfaction and for their body's needs. And sure, we all eat emotionally sometimes, but it's not excessive in that way. And before you know it, they're intuitive eaters and they're not binge eaters.
When you were coping with the troubles in your young life, your child life, and you resorted to food for that, did you know what you were doing, or did it just feel like this is something I need to do to make myself feel better? I need to eat something.
It's definitely that I thought that's what I needed to do to feel better. I didn't have other coping mechanisms.
And when you ate, how much did you eat, and what were you eating?
You know, I couldn't tell you calorie-wise how much I ate, but I would eat whatever was available that was in open containers, because I was also ashamed of it and trying to hide it.
Yeah.
So I would eat a little bit out of a lot of different containers, so I was actually consuming a lot of food in different containers.
So it wasn't cravings. You weren't craving Oreos. You were just you just wanted to eat to feel better because it made you feel better. But then in the end, you realized, I suppose, at some point you understood that if you overeat or you eat lots of sugary, fatty foods, you're going to gain weight, right?
Eventually, when I got older, as a child, my whole mindset was, I need to feel better. I need to feel better now.
Mm-hmm.
And so food did that for me, and that's why I overate.
For people who use food as a stress reliever, Elise, for people who use food because it makes them feel better, how difficult is it for them to recognize that's what they're doing?
Well, you know, life is difficult in many ways. And so we just want to get through it. And I think certainly for young people, there isn't a connection when they're as young as five, as you were, Shelley. There is not that connection that, oh, I am going to this food to make myself feel better. But as life goes on, I think that recognition arises.
Shelley's not alone when she says she tried the diets and the diets worked. The weight would go away, and she'd get off the diet and resume something resembling a normal meal plan, and the weight would come back. Why does that happen, Elise?
Okay, so there's several reasons. First of all, physiologically, when a person's dieting, they're essentially in semi-starvation, and we have a very important part of our brain, the survival part of our brain, the reptilian brain, that instinctually knows that that we're starving, and it sends out messages to keep us alive. And one of the most important messages is to slow everything down, so the metabolism slows down. At the same time, when we get off of the diet, we have a hormone that recognizes our fullness. It's called leptin. That leptin, in fact, probably happens while you're on the diet. That rises and that lowers so that you're not feeling, it's early here, sorry, so you're not feeling as full as normal. And so you get off of the diet, and from a physiological standpoint, the brain just wants to get you in something I call homeobalance, get you back to where you were. So you start eating again, even if it's not excessive amounts of food, on a slowed metabolism, your body gains the weight back and even more. From a psychological standpoint, one is so deprived of what they want to eat when they're on the diet that the first foods they go back to are the foods that they haven't been able to
wow.
eat. And so sometimes there's not excessive eating after the diet. Often there is. But in either case, a person is going to gain the weight back and likely more.
How long have we known that about dieting? And how long, and I guess if people like you know this, the people who design these diets also know this, how long have we known this is what happens?
Oh, for a long time. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. So the diet industry is there to make money.
Yep. Yeah. Which is why one of the first orders of business, if you adopt this intuitive eating philosophy, you say, is to reject the diet culture because they are toxic for the reasons we just spoke about?
They're toxic for many reasons. Diet culture promotes a worshiping of being...
Well, I'll tell you what. Hold on. Let me stop you there because we have to take a break, and I'll come back and we'll talk about why this diet culture is toxic.
Okay.
With Elise Resch, who's a nutrition therapist and the author of Intuitive Eating. Also with us, Shelley Johnson, who is a practitioner of intuitive eating. And boy, I'll tell you what, it's worked for her. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about intuitive eating. If you're like me, that is a new term. I'd never heard it before. Elise Resch kind of coined it because she wrote the book about it. She's a nutrition therapist, author of Intuitive Eating, An Anti-Diet Revolutionary Approach, among other books. She joins us from California. And Shelley Johnson is in our studio from Lake Wylie, the author of Start Where You Are Weight Loss. She's a practitioner of intuitive eating, and we'll find out how you found your way to that, Shelley, in a moment. But I want to go back to the question I asked just before the break of Elise, and that is one of the first things, if you're going to take up intuitive eating, is to reject the diet culture because you say diets are toxic. Why?
Okay, and before I do that, I just want to clarify, I'm the co-author of Intuitive Eating, and I am okay. the author of the Intuitive Eating Workbook for Teens and a couple other things. So I okay. do have a co-author. In any case, diet culture is bathes us in some toxic beliefs. And the first one that I was starting to say was that it causes us to worship thinness and believe that that's the path to health, and it has a moral virtue attached to it. And the way to get there is promoting weight loss, and it people who have lost weight around the diet, you know, dieting are considered to be heroes, you know, and they attain a higher status. And those who can't or those who do lose the weight and gain it back start feeling demoralized. And it demonizes the way that people eat, and so it makes people very hypervigilant about their eating, and foods become good foods and bad foods, and so if they eat something that's on their bad food list, they feel bad about themselves. And it's a social justice issue also, because it disproportionately harms marginalized people, and so it's just in every way... I'll use the word again. It's toxic, and we have to. For 38 years, I've been, 25 years is when the first intuitive eating book came out, but I've been trying to help people get away from diet culture.
You said something about the idealization of thinness a mm-hmm. moment ago. It seems to me that people who go on diets, people who adopt this, many people who adopt intuitive eating, which we'll talk about in some depth in the next few minutes, their goal is to change their body image. Their goal is to lose weight. Their goal is to become thin, for lack of a better word. That's not the goal?
Well, no, it is not the goal okay. of intuitive eating by any means. The goal of intuitive eating is changing one's relationship with food so that we get the most satisfaction we can from eating, being respectful to our bodies. And weight loss, if it were to happen, is a side effect. It is not the goal of intuitive eating. And so... this is not a new diet. It's the opposite of that.
So when you adopted this intuitive eating approach, Shelley, was that your goal, to lose the weight? Or had you come to the realization that you had an unhealthy relationship with food and you wanted to address that?
I knew I had an unhealthy relationship. When I started intuitive eating, I was over 260 pounds at that point. And I wasn't healthy. I was having a lot of health problems. My knees hurt, my hips hurt, my ankles hurt. I couldn't go up a flight of stairs without breathing heavy. And so when I started intuitive eating, my goal was, I couldn't do restrictive dieting anymore. And intuitive eating was, you can eat whatever you want. And that's what I needed. I needed to be able to eat whatever I wanted and not make myself crazy with, you can't have this, you can't have that.
We're going to come back to that. I'm writing down Haagen-Dazs as a trigger word. But how did you find out about this approach?
You know, I've been dieting for 20 years, and at some point somebody mentioned it to me. And I don't think I started it right away. It was in 2010 when I wrote that in my journal, if it's not about food, then what is it? And that's what, okay, intuitive eating is not about restricting food. It's about building a different relationship with food.
Where did the idea come from, Elise? Because you're the co-author of this book, Intuitive Eating, and you're about to put out the fourth edition of it in June. And I believe the first edition came out in the 90s.
Yes.
I know that you're a nutrition therapist and you specialize in eating disorders, but where did intuitive eating come from? Where did the idea come from?
Well, I certainly knew from the time I became a registered dietitian nutritionist that dieting was not an arena that I wanted to engage in. I had dieted myself when I was young. I had dieted and binged, and I knew that diets were toxic even then. However, there wasn't any other way, and so I wanted to work with children with disabilities, and I ended up getting referrals to help people lose weight, and it was never a comfortable feeling. I knew it wasn't something I wanted to be doing. But I gave people meal plans, which I don't believe in now. And people did lose weight, and they came back very unhappy after they had gained it back. And so sometime early in the 90s, there was conversation out there about the non-diet approach. And I started reading about that just from some psychologists who wrote about it. And I thought to myself, wow, I mean, the idea of telling people they could eat whatever they wanted to eat. I mean, I have a Master of Science degree in nutrition. How can I tell people, eat whatever you want? And yet, psychologically, it just felt right to me because I'm very interested in psychology. And so I started writing a book about it. My co-author also was on the same path, and we came together to write this book. And the term intuitive eating, well, it just felt right.
So I want to ask both of you, because you're not, you don't know each other, and you're not connected in any way in terms of pushing this idea of intuitive eating, but I want you to both define it. I'll get Elise to do it first, and then I want to hear from you, Shelley. What exactly is it that we're talking about? What is intuitive eating,
Elise? Well, that's such an important question, because people have misconceptions of what it really is. So the official definition is that it's a dynamic interplay of instinct, emotion, and thought, meaning it addresses the three parts of the brain, as I mentioned earlier, the reptilian part, which is our instinct. That's our instinct to survive, our instincts for hunger and fullness and what we like to eat. And then the limbic part, or the mammalian brain, which is the emotional part of the brain. Our emotions affect can affect our desire to eat or not eat. And then, as humans, we become humans with the neocortex, which is the part of the brain that's the cognitive part, where we can have our ability to challenge thoughts, our ability to support our emotions. So when you come together with your instincts, your emotions, and your thoughts, you're an intuitive eater. Basically, we're all born with all of this well, the majority of us are born. There are obviously some babies that aren't, but with all this information that we need to know how to eat. Babies know how to eat. We just get pulled away from it by diet culture.
So she's the scientist. You're not the scientist, Shelley. How would you define it?
I would define it as eating when I'm hungry and stopping when I'm comfortably full. And that's what I've been doing for 10 years now.
Is that what most people who do not have eating disorders and who do not have this yo-yo relationship with dieting, losing weight, gaining it back, is that how most people approach food, you think?
That would be my guess. You know, if your body will tell you what you're craving. So if you're hungry, you eat what your body's craving, and then you stop when you're comfortably full.
So here's something I've heard both of you say. You say, Shelley, that you could not go through, when you found intuitive eating, when you adopted this approach, you said you couldn't go through any more of these restrictive diets where you could not eat certain things for a certain period of time. And Elise, you have said that with intuitive eating, people, this is a quote, can eat whatever they want to eat without restriction. And that, to me, seems highly counterintuitive, particularly if you face food challenges. How is this possible?
Are you speaking to me, Elise?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
in the beginning, there has to be a rebound from restriction. So when you eat whatever you want, you need to feel that you have full permission to eat as much of it as you need, whenever you need it, to just counter all of those years of restriction. What ends up happening eventually, when you feel full trust that you can have whatever you want for the rest of your life, something occurs, and it's called habituation, which habituation is actually defined as the greater the stimulus, the lesser the response. The more you have of something, the less magical it becomes. The more you know you can have it forever, it's not forbidden. And over time, what ends up happening is you eat whatever you want, but it tends to be connected with your hunger and fullness, as Shelley has said. So the idea of you're going to spend the rest of your life eating enormous, boundless amounts of food, that's not correct. It may happen at first, but eventually it all settles down to what your body needs.
So this sounds like the psychology a parent would use on a teen, perhaps incorrectly. Don't touch that liquor bottle because that's for adults. And, of course, the first thing they're going to do when you leave the house is touch that liquor bottle because it's forbidden. So when you take off the restrictions, you say you come to have a normalized relationship with this?
Well, you know, Mike, you just hit the most important piece of why diets don't work. Within each of us, we have this little little toddler whose favorite word is no. And we carry that toddler with us our whole life. The toddler is just trying to become independent and autonomous. And it comes back out in big time in teenage years, but I still have my rebellious toddler inside of me. And so the first thing that happens when we're told no is, as you just said, with the teen who wants to drink if they're told not to, we go after what we're told we can't have as a means of asserting our autonomy. And so it's people say to me, I'm such a failure at dieting, and I'll say, no, you're not. You're a success at ego development and identity because that autonomous part of you has rejected dieting.
So, Shelley, when you started this and you were in the 300-pound range, you started it, I suppose, because you wanted to feel better, be healthier, you wanted your knees to stop hurting, you wanted to lose weight. This is an unrestrictive diet. So that means if you wanted to, I'm going to come back to the Haagen-Dazs now because that's where my head is at. If you wanted to, you could have sat down on the sofa and eaten a carton of Haagen-Dazs.
Well, I wouldn't say a carton. What you could do is eat as much Haagen-Dazs as you wanted until you were comfortably full and then stop. And I think that's what happens when you're binge eating, at least for me, is that I wouldn't stop. I knew I was full and I would just keep eating.
Well, what made you stop then? What made you decide, okay, I'm going to have this bag of potato chips. I'm going to have this box, this carton of Oreos. I'm going to eat this ice cream, but I'm going to stop. What made you stop, having not had any experience with stopping in the past?
When I was early on and I couldn't tell if I was full, what I did was serve myself what I would normally eat and then cut that in half. And that's what I did at the very beginning because I couldn't tell I was full. And then now I can tell I'm comfortably full. If I eat more than I'm comfortably full, my stomach actually hurts.
And I want to come back to this idea, Elise, that this is not a diet. Intuitive eating is not a diet. Is it even, and it's not even necessarily a weight loss approach, is it?
No, and I want to say that we have to fight weight stigma in our culture. I mean, people come in different sizes and shapes, and we're working toward body acceptance of all sizes and shapes. And so our goal is not weight loss. If it happens to happen as a result, as it happened for Shelley, so be it. But it's not. We're not trying to get people thinner. because that just promotes weight bias and weight stigma, which, by the way, is use the word toxic again, for so many people who feel so stigmatized and bullied, and they won't go to the doctor because they're afraid the doctor's just going to say, get on the scale, lose weight, and feel humiliated. Or they won't go to the, go outside and walk because they feel that they're going to be bullied. So the first goal really is changing our culture and changing weight bias so that all people are accepted of all sizes.
I'm trying to understand this because on the one hand, it would seem to me that you wouldn't be, you as an individual would not be focusing on this, would not even be interested necessarily in intuitive eating because they already do it if they don't have a weight problem or they don't have a problem that's making them unhealthy in some other way with their relationship to food. So the people who would be interested in this are people who do have that unhealthy relationship and who are suffering the consequences of that unhealthy relationship and they want to change. But on the other hand, you're saying that we have, we should not idealize thinness, and we should accept bodies in all the shapes and sizes that they come in. How do those two ideas fit together?
My belief is that people should get to a weight where they're comfortable, and I can tell you I was not comfortable in any way at 304 pounds. Mm-hmm. I wasn't healthy, and I wasn't comfortable in my own body. And I believe that everybody should be comfortable in their body, regardless of what size that is. If you're comfortable there, then fine. But I use intuitive eating, and it was my method of weight loss because I was eating way too much, and I changed my relationship with food by listening to my body and deciding, this is what my body needs, so I'm going to stop when I'm full.
You've been practicing this now for 8 years.
For 10 years. It took me 2 years to lose the weight, and I've kept it off for 8 years.
Is it a challenge to lose the weight, or have you come to this new relationship with food that seems organic, that seems completely natural to you now?
Right now, it's completely natural to me. I will say that it's not just about the food, too. I had to do a lot of introspection about why I was using food in a way it was never intended to be used. You can enjoy food, absolutely, but you can't use food to as an emotional support, as a crutch, as any other reason other than fuel.
Did you do all this work completely by yourself, or did you have a nutritionist or a therapist of some sort who helped you through all the various stages to get to where you are today?
I've worked with a therapist, and I've done a lot of experiential work in therapy and psychology with people trying to help me understand my motivations of why I was using food.
So one of the first rules of this, Elise, is to reject the diet mentality. We've talked about that. Another is to, and this is an important phrase, I think, honor your hunger, but respect your fullness. And you've talked about this too, Shelley. What does that mean, to honor your hunger, Elise, and to respect your fullness?
Well, first of all, there are no rules of intuitive eating. They're simply
okay.
Principles, because rules
okay.
are
principles.
Attached to diets. And I think that being able to honor your hunger and respect your fullness has to come with that sense that you will never deprive yourself again. Because if you believe that at some point that food's going to be taken away, it's very, very difficult to stop when you're comfortably full. And honoring hunger simply means that we have the instinct to survive, as I said, and to know when we're hungry, although, as Shelley said, it takes a while because people have, you know, lost touch with their hunger and fullness. So we find that if we're eating from comfortable hunger, then we're going to get the most satisfaction. And I actually like to lead with satisfaction. If we're going to get satisfaction in our eating, it's going to inform hunger and fullness, meaning if you were going to your favorite restaurant, you probably wouldn't eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the car on the way, because intuitively people know that the dinner's not going to taste very as good as it would if you were comfortably hungry. So feeling that inside, that I'd like to start eating when I'm hungry, and it will give me more satisfaction, is a great motivator. And then stopping when you're full, it's hard. I wrote a paper called The Sadness of Saying Enough. And sometimes, you know, when something's really good, whether it's a vacation or a delicious food, it's hard to stop when the time is, you know, done for that experience. And with eating, as Shelley so aptly said, she would feel uncomfortable if she ate beyond fullness. And what people start to realize is they can eat whatever they want when they're hungry again. And we get to eat, you know, maybe five times a day. So dealing with that feeling of I'm full, I'm sad, I'm going to stop, but I'll eat again, whatever it is also a great motivator.
Let's stop there. We'll come back with more in just a moment on intuitive eating on Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking with Elise Resch, a nutrition therapist and author, a co-author of Intuitive Eating, an Anti-Diet Revolutionary Approach, and Intuitive Eating for Teens, two different books. Shelley Johnson is with us. She practices intuitive eating and has lost a considerable amount of weight, but that is not the goal of intuitive eating, and it is not a diet. It is simply a new approach or a normalization of your approach toward food. And one of the things that we've talked about is it's unrestricted. If you want a donut, you say Shelley, jelly donut.
Jelly donut.
if you want a donut, you have a donut. But usually you say you stop after two or three bites because you have sated that craving. And that is because you're an adult and it started when you were five, a relatively new approach to food, right?
That's what I do. That's correct. And I will say about the restricted foods, the only thing I don't eat is anything I'm allergic to. Anything other than that, I can have.
So there are no rules here, as we've said, but there are principles. And the third principle, Elise, is you have to make peace with food and give yourself license to eat. There are no bad foods. If you view food as your enemy because you're dieting and trying to lose weight, how do you then convince yourself that food is not your enemy, because that's why you are where you are and what you want to do about it?
Well,
how is it not your enemy?
Okay, so Shelley came to understand from what I've never met Shelley, but that what was driving her need to have more food than her body needed was not obviously physiological, it was emotional. And that's such an important point, and I'm so glad, Shelley, that you mentioned going to therapy and dealing with issues in one's life. And so when we come to understand that having whatever we want to eat is not the problem, it's that, I mean, we want to ask ourselves the question, questions. Am I hungry? And if you're hungry, eat exactly what you want to eat. But if you're not hungry, what am I really feeling and what do I truly need rather than the food? And so it's not incompatible to eat what you want to eat and to understand that eating is for pleasure, satisfaction, and physical needs, you know, fuel, and that our emotional needs are best met in other ways. Not that we don't, as I said earlier, I think that we don't all occasionally eat emotionally. It's just human. Food can be comforting. It's just a matter of how, you know, whether you're going to it on a regular basis for a coping mechanism.
Christine on Twitter writes, without knowing it, I have been practicing intuitive eating. I lost a lot of weight over the summer with a stem cell transplant, and since then, I have eaten what I want and paid attention to what full is. I almost always take food home. American portions are too much. Actually, that's how I choose restaurants. I choose restaurants that give you too much so you can have a second meal out of it, at least. This is a new approach for a lot of people, and it's a new concept for a lot of people. And for people who battled what you battled, Shelley, these eating disorders, and the fact that you felt you were overweight and you were hurtful, you were hurting because of it, this is not just a new approach to food, it's a self-realization process. So where did you start? What's the first step you take? What was the first step you took to begin this process that you weren't probably too sure about when you started?
Well, it started with, am I hungry? And if I'm not hungry and I want to eat, what's the matter? And I still do that to this day. If I want to overeat, I'm not hungry and I want to eat, I stop myself, what's the matter, Shelley? What do you need? Because I don't need food in that moment, I need something else. I need to be nice to myself, I need to go do something that nourishes me, that comforts me, something that's not related to food. Mm. And once you figure out why you're eating, what the emotion is or thought process is beforehand, the food will take care of itself. The want to abuse food will stop.
Where do you tell people to start, Elise?
I actually tell them to start with satisfaction. Because if you think about what's the most satisfying way to eat, you come to the understanding, as I said, that it's just more pleasurable to eat when you have some comfortable hunger. If you're in what we call primal hunger, where you haven't eaten all day, you can't even enjoy the food because you have to get it in so fast so that you can survive. And if you're eating when you don't have hunger, it really doesn't. It just doesn't taste as good. So listening to satisfaction will get you to hunger and fullness, I believe.
Hmm. One of the things, Shelley, that intuitive eating tells people who want to practice it, I suppose, is to cope with emotions with kindness and without using food to cope with those emotions. But you spent, for anybody, spent years using food to cope with emotions. How difficult is it? How difficult was it? How long does it take to change that relationship?
It takes some time, especially if you've got a habit out of turning to food to soothe yourself or deal with your emotional state. I will say that you need to feel your emotions, whatever they are, because the moment you start eating, you're not feeling anymore. So once you start feeling your emotion, and it only takes about 90 seconds to actually feel a full emotion.
But if you're using food, if you're using drugs, if you're using alcohol, which is a drug, if you're using other things to mask the pain that you're using the food to cover, that requires a willingness to go places that you're using food not to go.
That's correct, right? But that's how you get out of it. That's how you get out of this cycle that you're in with abusing food. Once you break the cycle and you start feeling what you need to feel, again, the food will take care of itself. It isn't this huge looming thing in your life anymore.
So you're a nutritionist, Elise. You're not a psychologist. This could be relatively frightening for some people to face the demons that they've been using food to mask.
I always encourage people to have some support, some therapeutic support while they're doing this, if this has been a lifelong, you know, experience of not being connected to hunger and fullness, but having food as the only way to deal with feelings. I think it's so important that people find a way to get some help.
And do you have to find that way? Because it would seem to me that if you come to the realization that food is what you've been using to mask whatever it is you're running from, that if you come to a healthier relationship with food without addressing the underlying problem, do you then transfer your compulsion to something else,
well,
maybe even worse?
a couple of important things here. First, you have to figure out whether you're using food because you feel bad about how you've been eating because you're so affected by diet culture that there's good foods and bad foods. So those feelings can change when you change your, you know, cognitive beliefs about food. So for many people that I've worked with and who have written to me, no, they didn't need to go to therapy because so many of their feelings were attached to feeling bad about how they were eating. And once that changed, then things just moved along to be intuitive. But for other people who do have, you know, some very deep issues, we do need some help.
Was that would that adequately describe you? Because you have felt you were overweight since you were five, and you had these eating disorder problems since you were five. Would that describe you?
Yes. If I wasn't using food, then I would be using something else. I would just transfer because I didn't want to feel. That was my issue. I did not want to feel what was going on, and I didn't want to feel bad about myself. I didn't want to feel shame especially. And so I used food, but if I wasn't using food, I also did other things, smoked, drank.
But the shame, if I understand your story correctly, the shame came from your father telling you that you were fat and from friends bullying you because you were overweight. So when the weight drops away, doesn't the shame drop with it in your case? Not everybody has the same story.
No, in my case, it didn't. I was ashamed of that for a long time. You know, I got bullied as a kid, and then my dad was calling me names. So I felt an enormous amount of shame, and that didn't just immediately go away when I lost the weight.
So that's the other thing. We talked a little bit about this, Elise. This is not about weight loss. This is not about being skinny. This is not idealizing, worshiping at the altar of Twiggy. This is about respecting your body, correct?
Correct, 100%. Correcting, it's about self-care. It's about how you treat your body. It's about how you talk to yourself about your body. So that is what respect is. We had toyed with naming that chapter Accept Your Body and realized that it takes a long time for people to come to accept their bodies, but to respect we can do on day one.
You also tell people to challenge the food police. Who are the food police and what does that mean?
Well, diet culture, you know, promotes all of these negative thoughts about food and eating, and so there's external food police. I mean, every diet is food police. Every parent who tells you don't eat this and do eat that or that you need to lose weight are the food police. And then we internalize those messages, and we have the internal food police that we then carry on. So it's challenging both the thoughts within ourselves and understanding that we weren't born with those thoughts. They were put into us by what society and families believe, and then being able to speak up. You know, people with eating disorders self-silence. They don't speak their feelings, and so getting the courage to speak up for what they need and what they feel and what they think is important. And sometimes that's very hard if we've got, you know, a parent who is not going to listen to us.
So since you've been so successful at this, Shirley, and you have been, you've been remarkably successful at this, I guess you've examined the underlying reasons for what led you to have to take this approach. Is there any feeling that you might fall back into those old habits, or is that just gone now?
That's just gone now, and I know that food won't fix anything. And I tell myself that on a regular basis, because whatever I'm dealing with, if something hard hits me, food will not fix this. Food won't fix it. And I can go on a binge and try to make it better, but in the end, food won't have fixed anything, and I'll have gained weight.
Do you know other people who have taken this approach? Is there like an intuitive eating club or organization that people with like minds get together with, or an online blog or something?
Yes, we do have an intuitive eating community. Sorry, Shelley, go ahead.
That's okay.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I actually don't belong to a group or a club. I actually do a support group with me and one other person because that's what works really well for me. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage anybody to find what works great for them and do that.
And so you do have this community, Elise?
Yes, we have an intuitive eating community online.
Because that support is important?
Wherever we can get support, whether it's online, whether it's personally, as Shelley says, with another friend, whether it's with a therapist, we all need support in this life. So, yes, I think it is very important.
Exercise is another part of this approach, I'm told. Have you incorporated that into your life as well?
My biggest thing about exercise is find what you like to do and do that.
Do it, yeah.
Yeah, because you won't stick with it if you don't like it. And the other thing is, don't look at exercise as burning calories. I don't ever look at exercise like that anymore. It's building strength and becoming stronger, and it's also good mentally for especially if you're prone to depression or negative thinking. It's really great for that. But I always find something I enjoy, and I do that.
You stress, Elise, that you should make food choices that honor your health while making you feel good, but you don't have to eat perfectly to be healthy. You can eat bad stuff once in a while, and you don't have to kick yourself. You can self-forgive. Is that correct?
Well, I don't call it bad stuff. I call it play food, because bad means you want to, or junk means you want to throw it in the garbage can. We all need to play sometimes, and so we need to have some foods that may not have much nutrition, but we need to react. I like to say all foods need to be emotionally equivalent. They may not be nutritionally equivalent. And the reason that the last chapter of intuitive eating has to do with nutrition, gentle nutrition, is that we don't want to focus on that early on. It's just going to happen organically over time. People just want to feel better, and so they start to eat in a balanced way that makes them feel better. If you're at that point where you really do only want donuts all day long, then fine, but you're probably not going to feel very well. So knowing that you can have them is great, and then listening to your body and seeing how you feel.
Mary Beth on Twitter writes, how do we talk to our kids about food, especially when kids today have so much access to junk food and sweets? And since you wrote a book about this for teens, talk about that for a second, Elise.
Well, studies show that the more you try to control your children, the more they're, just as we were saying earlier, they're going to act out. So I believe that babies know when they're hungry, they know when they're full. When you introduce solid foods, you sit as a family and eat the foods together, and there's all different kinds of foods there. You probably don't give a six-month-old a cookie as their first food. You introduce them to some nutritious foods, and then when the play food shows up, you don't restrict them. You don't tell them how much they can have of it. And I have the great privilege of seeing my clients have children who have, some of them now grown into adulthood, as intuitive eaters, because they have provided food for them. The parent's job is to provide the food, and the child's job is to decide how much of it to eat, not to be pushed, and we give them a variety of foods. And
what happens if you have a child who, like Shelley, uses food to mask a deeper problem?
That's a signal that says there's something going on in the family that needs to be addressed. And unfortunately, there are, not all parents are aware that what's going on with the eating is emotional. So we want to educate parents to take a look at that. If a child is eating far more than their physical needs, there's something else going on. Let's help them learn how to be able to speak about their feelings.
If you're only supposed to eat when you're hungry, and you're supposed to recognize that you're full and therefore you don't need to eat anymore, what do you do if you're out with friends or you're at a party or family mealtime comes at a time when you're not hungry? What do you do?
Well, then, I would sit and have a glass of water or something and wait until I'm hungry. If I know that there's something coming up in a couple of hours and I'm hungry right then, I'll have something small so that I'll be hungry at that time when they get together. And if you end up overeating, and you eat too much, then you just wait until you're hungry again. You don't beat yourself up. You don't use it as an excuse to overeat. You just say, okay, I ate too much. Done, and you move on.
Tyler on Twitter writes a closing comment that I think is important. Promoting intuitive eating as a way to lose weight is just co-opting it to serve diet culture. Weight loss may be a side effect, but it is not the focus. And I hope that we have made that abundantly clear as we've gone through this hour. With Shelley Johnson from Lake Wiley, the author of Start Where You Are, Weight Loss, and a practitioner of intuitive eating, and Elise Rich, nutrition therapist and co-author of Intuitive Eating, an Anti-Diet Revolutionary Approach. Thank you both for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.